I do have an update on our EU trade deal. I stand corrected. It's not $60 billion in investments. It's $600 billion in investments. I want to make that very clear.
Thank you for clarifying, Ms. Leavitt. It's not $600 billion either.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep, I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A., also in California in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains, KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets on the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, Delmarva FM, and most of your favorite podcast sites, Blanketing Planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me. Oh, good Lord. From bradblog.com. Thank you for joining us. I got to tell you, I have been buried so deep the past few hours or days, really, in Donald Trump's trade deal nonsense that I'm not even sure what we have coming up over the rest of the hour today, Desi Doyen.
It'll be a surprise.
But I'm pretty sure it includes your latest Green News report.
Yes, it right? better. Yes.
Filled with exciting and encouraging news, as always?
Something like that.
Okay.
Sure,
I will look forward to that. In the meantime, let's start here. All of these supposed trade deals that you have seen the White House announcing over the past several days, or perhaps I should say you have seen the corporate media announcing with great fanfare over the past several days via headlines like this from the New York Times. Korean trade deal. President Trump announced a trade deal with South Korea, putting 15% tariffs on its goods imported by the U.S. Now, these various headlines, you've seen them about Korea and I think Japan and others. You've seen them. The EU, of course. We'll get to that in a minute. But they may appear to be much less than they seem, or at least they are much less than they appear. Take them all with a great big grain of salt, which I'll get to in a moment as well. But just a reminder, when you see the White House announcing trade deal with such and such a country, putting a 15% or a 25% or a 50% tariff on its goods, as with Brazil at the moment, these are tariffs on goods that are imported by the U.S. When you see that, remember, that is actually a 15% or 25% or a 50% tax on you. It is not a tax on the other country. I know Donald Trump is so proud of this. Come out, we're charging them 25%. They're charging us nothing. No, actually, he's charging you 25% on anything you buy from their country. Whatever the percentage is, you are paying it. Not the other country. No matter how Trump continues to try and gaslight the nation about this, this is a tax. This is a tax on you. Or at least a tax on whoever is importing the specific good. They can, of course, when they import it into the U.S., they can choose to lose money by paying that tax themselves. And then not adding it to the price of the good when it gets sold to you. But of course, they won't do that. They don't do that. They pass that on to the consumer.
Especially publicly traded companies that have to answer to their shareholders.
Frankly, any company. No company is going to buy something and then sell it at a loss. That's just not how it works. So you will pay the increased price when you buy that good, whatever it is, merchandise, furniture, prescription drugs, food, etc. The consumer can be expected to pay anywhere from 60 to 90% of the tariff that is placed by Donald Trump and Donald Trump alone on those goods being imported from other countries. So the importer may eat a little bit of it. The wholesaler may eat a little of it so they don't have to raise their prices too much. But in general, you're going to pay anywhere from 60 to 90% of that sales tax that has been added to your things that you buy when you hear them announcing Donald Trump has made a deal for a 25% tariff on goods from Japan. His so-called trade deals are agreements to tax the U.S. consumer for those goods. Foreign nations, even though they don't pay that tax, we do. Foreign nations don't like tariffs anyway, in general, because it means they're likely going to sell fewer of those goods to the U.S. consumers because the price of those goods will go up for the consumer, not for the foreign country with whom super genius, greatest dealmaker of all time has just secured an agreement to make you pay more for stuff. Those increases in prices on everything from produce to coffee, to ground beef and other goods, cars, etc., are already showing up as we move beyond the items that importers had already had in their inventories. When Trump announced his tariffs would be coming earlier in the year, companies went on a blitz and bought up imported goods and materials from other countries like crazy in order to get those things before the new taxes on those imports went into place. So they got a lot of that stuff in inventory that they're able to sell without having to increase the prices. Yet, companies have had a lot of these non-tariffed goods in their inventory, but it is beginning to run out as the new deadline for these new taxes, August 1st, for Trump's tariffs, is now upon us, promising, if they actually go into place this time, even more expensive goods and less non-tariffed inventory. Meaning prices are about to go up if Trump actually plows through this time with his plan for the largest tax increase on American consumers, perhaps in American history. He likes to say everything is the biggest, the greatest. Nobody's ever seen it. It's a record. Well, he's got a record here. This could be the largest single tax increase on Americans ever. On Wednesday, Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell, appointed to the job, by the way, by Donald Trump during his first term, announced that the Fed would be keeping interest rates where they are for now in order to see what effect Donald Trump's tariffs will have on the economy in the days ahead, as he explained that prices have been increasing, have been inflating, that it is already creeping in thanks to the tariff regime so far. This, of course, infuriates Donald Trump when Powell says these things because he wants to lower interest rates. He wants Powell to lower the rates to increase borrowing, to spur the economy, which has been lagging since he took office at the beginning of the year. GDP is down since last year when you had a regular president running the country. But lowering interest rates like Trump wants, that is also inflationary, and it will raise prices for consumers, which, even though Trump ran on promises to lower prices, not just to curb inflation, but to actually lower prices, they're not lower. Trump continues to raise prices for consumers while pretending that the U.S. is, in the meantime, taking in billions and billions of dollars from other countries thanks to those tariffs. Real Donald Trump, as he goes on his failing social media site, texted, tweeted, whatever, yesterday, Jerome Too Late Powell has done it again. He is too late and actually too angry, too stupid, and too political to have the job of Fed chair. Gosh, I wonder why anyone would have hired this jackass for the job in the first place, if that's the case. They must be even stupider than Powell. Am I right, Mr. Trump? He continued about Jerome Powell. He is costing our country trillions of dollars. Too late is a total loser, and our country is paying the price. Actually, the only price that our country is paying is for Trump's new taxes on American consumers for imported good. Taxes that Trump is promising to increase for reals this time. No more delays, no more pushing back the deadline. He will be increasing them on August 1. Earlier this week on Wednesday, Trump promised to do exactly that, writing in all caps on his failing social media site, quote, "The August 1st deadline is the August 1st deadline. It stands strong and will not be extended. A big day for America." It will not be extended like those other deadlines that he instituted. And then he pushed back again and again and again for 90 days. Okay, just for 30 days more. The August 1st deadline is the August 1st deadline. It will not be extended. That was on Wednesday. And then on Thursday, it was announced, as CNN reported, breaking news, President Trump announced his agreement to pause higher tariffs on Mexico for 90 days ahead of his Friday deadline for countries to reach new trade deals. In the meantime, apparently, the 25% tax that he has already slapped on you for all goods coming from Mexico, apparently that will stay in place. That's been in place for some months. And it is those taxes on you that Trump is crowing about when he talks about America getting rich thanks to the tariffs on foreign nations. His dumb, sycophantic right-wing media appear more than happy to help him out with this gaslighting, like Fox Business News in a headline that Trump copied and pasted as a huge graphic onto his failing social media site, reading, "July tariff revenues break monthly record with $150 billion collected so far in 2025. Wow. $150 billion collected, breaking all records. Collected from who, Fox News? Collected from who, Big Donnie? Well, from you, of course. Those, that $150 billion record paid to the U.S. Treasury, are taxes that you paid into the Treasury. A record $150 billion in new taxes so far in 2025, which Republicans who used to sign pledges vowing no new taxes, well, they appear to be just fine with it because Republicans in Congress have the power to stop these taxes immediately if they wanted to. They're only possible due to a potential misinterpretation of a 1977 law that Trump says allows him to declare an emergency to require that allows him to then place these tariffs on imported goods. Well, that authority can be removed by Republicans who control Congress tomorrow if they wanted to. But apparently they do not want to. Apparently they like hiking taxes on Americans, putting the lie to yet another long-held pretend claim of Republicans, just like they are in favor of law and order. They're in favor of states' rights. They're opposed to increasing the debt. They will protect Medicare and Medicaid, etc. All of them lies to trick you into voting for them. Lies that they will forget all about, apparently, once and if they are elected.
Republicans only care about cutting taxes for the rich. When it comes to raising taxes, they are all for it as long as it hits the little guy.
So back to those little guy tariffs. When you see all of those headlines about Trump striking a deal with such and such a country to impose a 20% tariff on them or whatever, just remember that's a new 20% tax on you. But even those deals that they are announcing with much fanfare and with much help from the corporate media, even those deals are actually, as it turns out, much less than they seem. As Layla Jones reported this week at TPM, a prevailing narrative has emerged about U.S. trade agreements. Other countries are bending under the heavy hand of an all-powerful Trump. Axios framed an agreement reached with Japan as evidence of U.S. omnipotence in global trade. Reuters reported a 660% bump month to month in Chinese exports of rare earth minerals to the U.S. Wow, 660% bump from China. That sounds pretty good. Oh, wait, that so-called bump, that came because the Chinese had all but stopped all exports of rare earth minerals in retaliation against Trump's initial tariff announcement. So when they restarted them, yeah, a 660% bump. And a Wall Street Journal article described the trade deal that the U.S. struck with the European Union on Sunday. Well, a deal Trump has said has been struck, we'll get to that, as, quote, the least bad outcome for business leaders. But economists that TPM spoke to suggest that these agreements will end up actually harming everyone involved. Foreign governments, the U.S. governments, American businesses, American consumers. Ina Manick, a trade policy fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, told TPM, quote, what I'm seeing so far is the fact that a lot of these folks are talking about these trade deals as the other countries are losing and the U.S. is winning. That narrative, she says, is actually incorrect. The U.S. is putting up all these barriers. If anyone is losing, it is us. It is us here in the U.S., she says, that are going to pay for this long term. The Trump administration has tossed out generations of trade policy practices dating back to World War II, protocols which involved Congress, small business, corporations, academics, other stakeholders. Instead of fighting for favorable trade agreements, countries are negotiating directly with Donald Trump and his handful of trade officials for hazy promises, seeking merely anything that appears to be not worse than what has been offered to other countries. And by not worse, they mean will not prevent their goods from being sold to the U.S. market. And when there are less goods being sold to the U.S. market, guess what? Prices on those goods go up. It's called supply and demand. And you, the consumer, will also be paying the cost for that. Given this chaotic state of affairs, Jones reports, it's understandable that governments seem relieved just to put an end to the volatility and accept lower, though still significant, tariff rates. But the lack of details released around the individual deals makes it difficult to judge their merits. As I began this rant, I noted that these deals are even less than they seem to be. For example, you might have seen video of Donald Trump with European Union Commission President Ursula von der Leyen with Trump at one of his golf courses in Scotland over the weekend, with Trump announcing what he called the biggest deal ever made.
I think it's great that we made a deal today instead of playing games and maybe not making a deal at all. I think it's... I'm going to let you say, but I think it's the biggest deal ever made. Thank you very much. Congratulations.
Yeah, well, she didn't say it. He said it. She just tried to keep a straight face throughout all of this.
Yeah, her face was funny.
I'm going to let you say it. I'm a great person, aren't I? I'll let you say it. As Jones reports at TPM, Trump's deal with the 27 countries that comprise the EU includes a 15% baseline tariff for most European goods. Yes, that's a new 15% tax that you're going to now have to pay on anything that comes from Europe. The EU also agreed not to tax a yet unknown category of U.S. imports to purchase $750 billion of energy products from the... Don't laugh. We'll get there. $750 billion of energy products from the U.S. and invest another $600 billion in the country, according to Trump. And of course, apparently this was misreported by White House press secretary prior to that, who came running out to make a change at some point to that particular announcement.
I do have an update on our EU trade deal. I stand corrected. It's not $60 billion in investments. It's $600 billion in investments. I want to make that very clear.
Man, $600 billion in investments by the EU? Donald Trump has done it again. He is, in fact, well, the art of the deal. He's the greatest deal maker who ever lived. Well, I'll let you say that. But anyway, nobody actually seems to know what any of that really means. It did not, however, stop the sycophantic Trump media outlets like Breitbart, for example, who doesn't know what any of that means either, from trumpeting this news to their gullible readers with the giant headline reading, "Trump reaches historic trade deal with EU, Europe to buy $750 billion in U.S. energy," all caps, because it's Breitbart. Which Trump, of course, subsequently copied and pasted over to his failing media site. As noted, nobody actually knows or seems to know what any of those numbers actually mean. And there is a reason for it, it appears. The trade deals in question aren't actually deals at all, explains The Economist, Manick from the Council on Foreign Relations. They're proposals, or they're announcements of proposals. Quote, she says, sort of a framework for future discussions. These are not actually real deals. She says, until we see a full text of things, it's going to be hard to know what exactly was agreed to, she said, about the EU deal, since these sorts of deals, the trade negotiation process typically takes years, she said. Joshua Mask, an economist and professor at Temple University, said things could change along the way, he explained, as the details of the agreements are hammered out and Trump is facing a lawsuit challenging his authority to issue sweeping tariffs in the first place. But I'll try to get to that in a moment as well. In the meantime, as noted, the big EU deal, the biggest deal ever made, as Trump described it on Sunday when he announced it, is, as I've been telling you, much less than it seems. EU News reported it this way on Tuesday. The trade deal between the European Union and the United States is off to a rocky start. The preliminary agreement announced at the end of a face-to-face meeting of Ursula von der Leyen and Donald Trump in Scotland has prompted a massive wave of criticism over its heavily lopsided nature in favor of American interests. On Monday, the European Commission spent the day briefing journalists to defend the deal as necessary to avoid a havoc-wreaking tariff war across the Atlantic. And then the story took a new twist when the White House published a fact sheet about the agreement with multiple claims that mismatched or downright contradicted the version of events that was presented by the European Commission just hours earlier. On Tuesday, the EU replied with its own statement, sowing further confusion in what appears to be, as EU News politely describes it, quote, a clash of narratives. A clash of narratives with the White House saying one thing about the deal and the EU saying something completely different about the deal. For example, on pharmaceutical trade, the White House says pharmaceuticals will be subject to the across-the-board 15% tariff that will apply to the majority of EU-made products as of August 1. The White House is proud of that, proud that they're going to be charging you 15% more for your prescription drugs that come from Europe. On the other hand, what the Commission, the European Commission, says, pharmaceuticals will, for the time being, be spared from the 15% tariff and instead remain under the current 0% rate until the Trump administration completes an investigation into the pharmaceutical sector. Quote, there will be no tariffs on pharmaceuticals this Friday, a senior official said, that in stark contradiction to the White House, who said there will be a 15% tariff beginning this Friday. On purchases of U.S. weapons, what the White House says, well, the EU, quote, agreed to purchase significant amounts of U.S. military equipment says the White House fact sheet. They do not cite any financial figures, however. On the other hand, what the European Commission says, absolutely not. The Commission has resolutely denied making any pledge to ramp up purchases of American-made weaponry. They say this is a highly sensitive matter for the EU, according to the to EU News, given that defense is a strictly national issue that EU member nations zealously guard. This is not decided by the European Commission, but by each individual state. While Ursula von der Leyen has promoted ambitious initiatives to boost defense spending by the EU, the final decision of how the money is spent, or if it is spent at all, rests exclusively in the hands of the capitals of each nation, not with the European Union Commission. Quote, arms procurement is not a matter for the Commission, a senior official said. The list goes on and on. Of one thing the White House is saying, a different, totally different thing that the EU is saying about this so-called agreement. Perhaps the most interesting is energy, which you heard Desi laughed about. What the White House says here, the EU will, quote, double down on its purchase of American energy, buying $750 billion worth by the end of Trump's second term. In practice, that will amount to $250 billion each year. The European Commission, on the other hand, which negotiated the deal on behalf of all 27 member states, actually lacks the authority to determine the amount, the type, and the origin of the energy supplies that are acquired by each individual member government and private companies. Therefore, they say it cannot legally bind the bloc to a goal of spending $750 billion on American energy. The announced number apparently is an indication based on the needs that the EU will face in the coming years to phase out the consumption of Russian fossil fuels, but none of this is apparently in the agreement, at least according to the EU.
Yeah, according to Clean Technica, which is a UK-based energy data firm, they're being very nice. They say it raises substantial doubts. Analysts question its feasibility, suggesting that Europe's commitments are essentially political theater, designed primarily to assuage Trump's ego. So what they point out is why this is unrealistic. They said it helps to examine the scale involved. Today, the EU imports only around $76 billion per year from the United States, mostly liquefied natural gas.
So they're going to go from $76 billion to $250 billion.
Within a year, $250 billion every year for the next 3 years.
Wow.
Perhaps you can start to see that there might be some problems with making that actually happen.
Well, here seems to be the biggest problem. The commission spokesperson says, quote, it's important to remember that the European Commission is not buying any of these commodities, and neither is the U.S. government selling any of this. These are all commercial decisions made by the company. The companies, those companies that buy and those companies that sell, according to the commission.
Yeah, I mean, basically, first of all, the European market is not yet structured with infrastructure to absorb this massive increase. But U.S. supply, they don't have the capacity to actually increase at this level, at this rate that supposedly the Trump administration is pretending can happen. There's not the export infrastructure. There's not the terminals, the pipelines, the shipping fleets aren't ready. The EU doesn't have the LNG receiving terminals, all of that. It's just not there.
Well, maybe then that is what the $600 billion that the U.S. is going to pledge, that the EU has pledged, according to the White House, $600 billion to invest in the U.S. In what? Nobody knows.
Right.
But what the White House says, the EU will invest $600 billion in the U.S. by the end of Trump's second term. Quote, this new investment is in addition to the over $100 billion that EU companies already invest in the United States every year, according to the White House fact sheet. What the Commission says in Europe, however, is quite different. They note, as with the energy purchases, the Commission is unable to design and implement investments on behalf of the private sector. A senior U.S. official says, quote, it's not something the EU as a public authority can guarantee. It's something based on the intention of private companies. And yet, despite all of this, despite the fact that the White House is saying one thing, the EU is saying another, the White House is portraying the energy and the investment pledges as if it is a done deal, a fait accompli. So, yeah. Even the deals that have been announced, that have gotten big headlines, that have you've seen them splashed across CNN, you know, Donald Trump inks a trade deal with EU. Even the ones that have been announced, as bad as they are for U.S. consumers, as much as they are going to cost U.S. consumers, well, they are even less than they actually appear to be. With Trump apparently just kind of making stuff up, I guess, and hoping that declaring it to be so will be enough. It probably will be for him. He just needs the headlines. He doesn't need the reality. It's certainly been enough to get him those big headlines that he's yearning for from Fox News and Breitbart that he can then subsequently copy and paste and republish over at his failing social media site to continue to dupe his duped supporters that he's some great deal maker and he's getting these great deals for the United States when all of them are, well, much less than they appear. The administration has come to nebulous agreements, notes TPM, with Indonesia and the Philippines as well, and claimed to make a deal with Vietnam. In that case, according to Politico, the announced details apparently differed so greatly from what Vietnamese officials had understood that some questioned whether a deal was made at all, just like what you heard in the EU. In announcing that supposed South Korea deal, trade deal, on Wednesday on his failing social media site, Trump declared, quote, I am pleased to announce that the U.S. of America has agreed to a full and complete trade deal with the Republic of Korea. The deal is that South Korea will give to the United States $350 billion for investments owned and controlled by the United States and selected by myself as president. South Korea is going to give $350 billion to Donald Trump to do with whatever he pleases, says Donald Trump. Well, University of Wisconsin political science professor Mark Kapelovich posted a copy of Trump's insane tweet and noted, quote, everything here is wildly illegal, and we should stop sane-washing and normalizing it and simply enforce the damn law even for this one special boy. Economist Dean Baker reposted all of that and added, quote, since everyone knows commitments mean nothing to Donald Trump, our trading partners all just say, sure, we'll give you $20 trillion to invest however you want. And Donald Trump can then go out and boast about it. He says it would make for a good comedy if the implications for the economy were not so large. From Scotland on Monday, Trump claimed that he'll probably apply a 15 to 20% blanket import tariff on countries that have not made dedicated agreements with the U.S. because he said, you can't sit down and make 200 deals. Apparently, he can't sit down and make a half a dozen deal. Which is weird because just a few months back on April 2, when he announced these new tariffs in the first place in a big Rose Garden ceremony that he declared to be Liberation Day, remember that? He said he expected to make more than 100 deals over the next 100 days or something like that. It appears he's made about, I don't know, 4 or 5, and even those appear to be much less than you may have believed them to be based on some of the ridiculous media headlines about them, even from real news outlets that are not Fox News or Breitbart. All right, one more. I know we're running late here, but one more related here before we get to a break. Speaking of everything being wildly illegal with all of this, you may have also seen this one, sane-washed by the media over the past day or two. U.S. President Donald Trump threatened Brazil with 50% tariffs, 50% tariffs this month, venting his anger over the country's prosecution of his political ally, former President Jair Bolsonaro. But the move may provide ammunition to plaintiffs aiming to bring down the centerpiece of the White House tariff agenda. Now, remember, Trump has been claiming that tariffs are necessary because the U.S., among other reasons, has been getting ripped off by every other country in the world for decades. As it turns out, it's not that they are tariffing our goods to rip us off. And, you know, that they're tariffing us and we're not tariffing them. It turns out that the unfairness that Trump is talking about in his brain is that we have trade deficits with many countries. We buy more from them than they buy from us. And that makes sense because many of these countries are, well, much smaller than ours, and we are much richer than most of them. So, of course, we're buying more from them than, say, the island of Bermuda is buying from us. But in the case of Brazil, we've actually got a trade surplus with them. For about 20 years, they have bought much more from us than we have bought from them. And yet, Trump is still threatening now a 50% tariff on them, which, by the way, will drive up your costs for things like beef and coffee, will drive them way higher. But as Reuters reports today, trade law experts and plaintiffs in a federal court challenge to Trump's sweeping tariffs, which are backed by the 1977 International Emergency Economic Powers Act, or IEEPA. He used that law to declare an emergency, a fentanyl emergency, an economic emergency, any kind of emergency that he needed. And therefore, under that law, he claims he's allowed to then unitarily impose tariffs without the approval of Congress, which actually has the tariff and taxing power. But the trade law experts who are challenging all of this say that his outbursts against Brazil is another example of him far exceeding any actual legal authority to levy tariffs. You can't just do it because you don't like somebody else's, some other country's internal domestic policies. Quote, it just shows that the president really thinks that he has unconstrained power to tariff. That's a big problem for the rule of law, said Jeffrey Schwab, a senior counsel, director of this litigation at the Liberty Justice Center. He's representing five small businesses that won in this case in the first round of the legal challenge to Trump's use of this law to impose tariffs on nearly all U.S. trading partners. The New York-based Court of International Trade found back in May that Trump, yes, exceeded his legal authority by using the IEEPA, but the appeals court has allowed those tariffs to remain in place while the case plays out, likely all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. So why is Trump smacking Brazil, which has a trade surplus with us in the first place, they're buying more from us than we do from them, with a 50% tariff, the highest of all of the so-called reciprocal rates that he's using? Well, he announced the Brazilian tariffs after a week of publicly feuding with Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, who had narrowly defeated the authoritarian, very Trumpy Jair Bolsonaro in a 2022 election. A week after that election, actually after Lula's inauguration, supporters of Bolsonaro stormed government buildings in the nation's capital in a failed January 6th-styled attempt to reinstate the right-wing former military officer as president. And now Bolsonaro is currently on trial in connection with that alleged coup, and Donald Trump is mad that people get charged for doing coups. In a July 9 letter to Lula announcing the tariffs, Trump said that the trial was a, quote, witch hunt that should end immediately. Sound familiar? The U.S. president cited Brazil's insidious attacks on free elections and, I guess, the ability to freely attack the government that you don't like. The letter contained some language identical, however, to tariff letters that were issued to other countries, explaining that the import levies were necessary to correct, quote, unsustainable trade deficits against the United States. But the U.S. doesn't have a trade deficit with Brazil. It actually has surpluses every year since 2008. Last year, a $6.8 billion surplus in 2024 alone. So those duties have no relation to any national emergency in the United States, according to Jennifer Hillman, a trade law professor at the Georgetown University Law Center. They have nothing to do with a trade deficit. Daniel Esty, a professor at Yale Law School, said that even if an argument can be made for trade deficits as a national emergency under IEEPA, Trump's tariffs to punish Brazil for acting against the former president are not legal. This is clearly outside the bounds of the law, so far outside as to be shocking, Esty said. Hillman served as a counsel to a group of Democratic lawmakers who filed an amicus brief in the appeals case here in this matter. They say this is just unlawful, what Trump is doing across the board. The Court of International Trade followed all of this, these charges, and found that, in fact, the initial fentanyl-related tariffs levied against China and Canada and Mexico, remember that? It was to stop the fentanyl. That's how all of this started. Well, in fact, they failed to deal with what is a sanctioned IEEPA national emergency under the U.S. law that Trump had declared over the deadly opioid and were unlawful. These are Trump administration, of course, has appealed this. It's probably going to go all the way to the Supreme Court. But one of the attorneys involved said there was a growing consensus among Washington trade lawyers that the IEEPA-based tariffs that Trump has been initiating are at a significant risk of being struck down entirely. All of this, as insane as it is, could simply just go away. And I think the rest of the world knows it. And yes, as Trump likes to say, they are all laughing at us. Even if the world economy, and especially the U.S. economy, could be about to take a very big hit in the months ahead because of all of this. So buckle up. At least you now have, hopefully, a better understanding about the nonsense that you have been, that we all have been hearing about all of these so-called trade deals. They are both imaginary and real all at the same time, just like the nightmare that we are all living through in this country for the foreseeable future. More real stuff and the Green News Report are still ahead on today's program. I'm Brad Friedman. You are listening to the Bradcast.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
You can mess with the Republicans and the Democrats. You can mess with the liberals and the slick bureaucrats. You can mess with the media and a third world refugee. You can mess with Texas, but don't you mess with me.
Well, it turns out they're messing with Texas and they're messing with you, sir. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com, especially if you're a Democrat. All right, we gave you a heads up on this last week with gerrymandering expert and author Dave Daley. I don't like calling him that because it makes it sound like he's a gerrymanderer. He actually writes about gerrymandering and redistricting and so forth.
He's an authority on
Correct.
It.
Correct. But so we talked about it a little bit, but now it is officially underway in the great state of Texas. CNN reports the Texas Republicans are, in fact, now powering ahead with a plan backed by Donald Trump to seize control of multiple Democratic U.S. House seats in the state ahead of next year's midterms by redrawing the state's congressional maps. Now, the state congressional map is already gerrymandered, but they want to gerrymander it further because they're really worried about losing control of the U.S. House next year and what all of that may mean for Donald Trump. Multiple Democratic sources said the new proposed map shows that Republicans are attempting to gain five more congressional seats in Texas by essentially just erasing entire districts with minority and or Democratic representation. And they hope that will help their chances of holding on to the House majority in the 2026 midterms, a majority that they hold by just a handful of seats right now. The map targets Democrats, including Rep. Greg Kassar, whose Austin seat would be completely eliminated. That would likely force him into a primary with another liberal Democrat, Congressman Lloyd Doggett, in the Austin area. Republicans also propose merging the seat of Rep. Al Green with a vacant seat that is currently held by the late Rep. Sylvester Turner. He died in office earlier this year. Green's Houston area district was altered more than any other sitting member, and Democrats expect that Green will run in the new seat, though now he may have to battle it out with some of the Democratic candidates who are already running for Turner's seat. It's a potentially seismic moment for the House, with Democratic governors in states like California vowing to attempt the same tactics to help their party win more seats if Republicans do indeed do this in Texas, leading to what one House Democratic lawmaker described to CNN as a, quote, redistricting arms race. To which I say, good. Don't vow it, California governors and Democratic governors in other states. Don't vow it. Do it. Do it, Democrats. And I say that, as I've noted before, you know, not fully comfortably, because, in fact, I'm strongly opposed to gerrymandering, partisan gerrymandering, racial gerrymandering, etc. But I am also strongly opposed to taking a butter knife to a gunfight, and Republicans have been running a gunfight at this point for many years when it comes to redistricting.
Especially when fascism is on the table.
And their corrupted Supreme Court is allowing all of this to happen. The nation ought to be fighting back. Everyone in the nation ought to be fighting back against this sort of thing. And blue states can, in fact, and should lead the way. They don't have as much room because, it's not quite as easy to gerrymander in that way. But Democrats plan to challenge the Texas map in court in the meantime. Good luck there. If the map is adopted, some in the party believe a best case scenario could be losing only two seats next year in the Texas delegation. Republicans are hoping they'll be able to flip five of them. Quote, should this map become law, we anticipate Texas will get sued and the map will get struck down, says Julie Mertz, the executive director of House Democrats' campaign arm, in a statement on Wednesday. As I said, good luck, Julie. One potential bright spot for Democrats in these maps, this new map is not as bad as it could be for the state's two South Texan Democrats, according to a Texas Democratic lawmaker who spoke to CNN on Wednesday. And I'm reading this thinking, well, don't say that out loud, dude. They'll change the map again. In a state which has already been gerrymandered to allow Republicans to hold a larger than 2-to-1 advantage in the state's U.S. House delegation. I know that Texas is of late pretty Republican. It ain't that Republican. It ain't 2-to-1 Republican. But that's how they drew the maps. Because the Republicans now control the maps, because the Supreme Court said that, well, federal courts must stay out of it. Leave it to the people who draw who were elected to draw their own maps, to pick their own voters. That's where we are. The new map features 30 districts that Trump would have won in 2024. That's up from the 27 under the current district lines. In total, there are five more seats in the new map that Trump won by more than 10 percentage points. According to the Texas Legislative Council, Trump has not commented on the Texas proposal, but Vice President J.D. Vance posted on X about California's congressional map. He described our map as an outrageous gerrymander. For the record, California's maps are currently drawn by a bipartisan independent commission, which is one of the things that's going to make it difficult to redistrict them at all out here, much less gerrymander them to screw Republicans. Though if Democrats can figure out how to do it, as much as I hate to say it, please do so, since it may mean helping to save the entire world at this point. California Governor Gavin Newsom has said he plans somehow to do exactly that if Texas actually moves forward here. Hey, Gov, looks like they're moving forward here. You got a plan yet, amigo? Time's a-wasting. Speaking of saving the world, Desi Doyen and the Green News Report is next on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is supporting you and the things that you care about. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. Right now, as much as ever. If you choose to support us, you can do it really easily, safely, and quickly via bradblog.com/donate. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you. I've exhausted myself with this show today, Desi Doyen.
I bet.
So I am more than happy to hand it over to you for our latest Green News Report.
If finalized, this amounts to the largest deregulatory action in the history of the United States.
Trump EPA moves to kill its own authority to regulate greenhouse gas emissions. 2025 on track to be one of the hottest years ever recorded. Plus,
natural disasters fueled more than $131 billion in global losses so far this year.
The economic toll of climate-intensified wildfires and severe storms is soaring.
Don't ask for whom that bell tolls. All of those stories and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
So this has been referred to as basically driving a dagger into the heart of the climate change religion.
Actually, it's not a religion, EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin. It's science. But how do we drive a dagger into the corruption of the fossil fuel industry, which has apparently bought you off? Any ideas? This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, seems like these climate change deniers are never going to go away, not as long as the fossil fuel industry is so profitable. But speaking of which, what do you got for us today?
Well, first, 2025 is on track to be the second or third warmest year on record, but it is unlikely to beat 2024 as the world's hottest year ever recorded.
So it's getting cooler.
No. According to a new analysis by the UK's Carbon Brief, long-term warming is still relentlessly trending upward, with the world projected to blow past the Paris Agreement target of 1.5 degrees Celsius of long-term warming above pre-industrial levels within the next 5 years. Mm. The cost of climate-fueled extreme weather disasters is soaring. Natural disasters around the world in the first 6 months of 2025 have caused more than $130 billion in global losses, losses, mostly due to extreme weather. That's according to a new analysis from the insurance company Munich Re. The report calculated that globally, insured losses hit $80 billion in the first half of this year, with the deadly Los Angeles wildfires in January accounting for about half of that total.
You know, climate change is not a religion, but you would think those folks who worship the almighty dollar would kind of be concerned about these numbers, no?
And notice that there are no deniers in the insurance industry.
There you go.
A different report calculates that total losses for the LA fires alone will top $65 billion. Mm. So naturally, the Trump Administration Environmental Protection Agency on Tuesday announced plans to rescind its own landmark scientific finding that underpins virtually all U.S. regulations that curb the emissions that cause dangerous man-made climate change. EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin proposed overturning the agency's 2009 endangerment finding that greenhouse gas emissions are a threat to public health and welfare. The endangerment finding came out of a 2007 U.S. Supreme Court ruling mandating that if the EPA found greenhouse gas emissions are a threat to public health, then it is legally obligated to regulate them as pollutants under the Clean Air Act. Now, rescinding the endangerment finding would mark the Trump administration's most consequential step yet toward killing the EPA's authority to regulate climate pollution. Without the endangerment finding, EPA would be blocked from regulating emissions that drive climate change, primarily from the burning of fossil fuels. If the proposed rule is upheld in the courts, it would severely limit the ability of future presidents to curb fossil fuel emissions. Without the United States, the world's largest historical emitter, working to reduce its own emissions, the rest of the world would have great difficulty in collectively keeping average global temperatures from rising above 1.5 degrees Celsius of pre-industrial levels, a threshold scientists say would bring even greater risk from increasingly destructive extreme weather disasters, rising seas, and more. Environmental groups vow to fight the Trump EPA's assault on climate and environmental standards in the courts. On the broadcast, David Doniger, senior attorney for the Natural Resources Defense Council, said they will fight as long as it takes, but he warns,
sadly, this legal battle will probably take most of the Trump administration to unfold, and that's all lost time from the point of view of trying to stave off the worst impacts of climate change. But it's the path we'll follow, and we think we can hold them to follow the law.
You know, until I spoke with David Doniger, I was quite concerned about all of this. I still am, but he did make me feel slightly better. He's been fighting this good fight for decades, and seemed like he was saying he thought we could win.
I hope he's right.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. And we're out of time as well.
Yes.
Got to get out. Thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen. Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show, want to hear it again, you can download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. Please consider hitting a donate button while you're there of any amount you can afford, from $5 to $5,000. We would welcome your support. You can also go straight to bradblog.com/donate to help us stay on your public airwaves. Drop me email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the social medias, especially Blue Sky, you will find me at The Brad Blog. You will find Desi at Green News Report. We'll see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world. Baby.